The town of Normal warns council member Stan Nord over claims of election interference in the Unit 5 tax referendum.
Unit 5 needs to be held accountable for these illegal actions.
If I continue to get involved in this, I'm looking at a lawsuit from the town.
That story coming up on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on the show today, Illinois State University works to close the achievement gap that the COVID pandemic only made worse.
Frankly, some of our students are years behind when it comes to grade level.
Illinois' new school superintendent shares how the state is helping students recover academically and emotionally from the pandemic. And doctors call for earlier screening as colorectal cancer cases rise in younger adults. Those stories follow a Bloomington Normal news update, which is just ahead. This is WGLT Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story continues with local patient Ryan Fuller and his mother, Stephanie.
Baseball, I do wear my hearing aids. They have been a big help because I have an EduMic, and my coach likes to use that and helps me when I'm pitching.
Ryan and Stephanie's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. More than one person has been in contact with the Normal Police Department to allege electioneering lately. Town Council Member Stan Nord recently was chastised and threatened with legal action by the town for attempting to interfere with an ongoing investigation. But as WGLT's Lindsay Jones reports, while Nord's actions got attention because of his status as an elected official, he's not the only person raising concerns.
In emails obtained by WGLT, Normal Town Council member Stan Nord repeatedly asked NPD Chief Steve Petrelli about how an investigation into alleged electioneering at Unit 5 is going. But when Normal Police Chief Steve Petrelli says the investigation is still ongoing and he can't say much beyond that, Nord kept going. He questioned whether NPD had been influenced to drag its feet. Nord also said if NPD needed a specific amount of public outcry to justify releasing more information, Nord would provide that, too. The multiple queries and the implication of some of Nord's comments have since resulted in Town of Normal lawyer Brian Day drafting a strongly worded cease and desist letter to Nord, suggesting that if he continued, the town would take legal action against him.
At a town council meeting on Monday, Nord responded.
I cannot represent you on things because I've been told if I do, I'm going to be meddling in things that I shouldn't be when I'm just kind of being the messenger, which is what an elected representative is supposed to do.
Mayor Chris Coos said the issue was about Nord not going through proper channels with concerns.
In a council manager form of government, the appropriate thing for a council member to do is address all concerns through the city manager, which he will not do.
But here's the thing. Nord's actions here aren't an anomaly this election cycle. Multiple people have been trying to get Normal Police involved during this election cycle regarding the Unit 5 referendum. There was a complaint made to law enforcement in mid-February, of course, which is the ongoing investigation Nord asked Petrelli about. But recently, a woman attended a choir concert at Normal West High School and then called the police to allege electioneering by parents on school property. Here's Vicki Rowe telling the Normal Town Council on Monday what she saw.
There were campaign materials on the table right by the door to enter the gym for the concert. You couldn't miss it because you had to go past this table of campaign literature.
Rowe said she called the police to report the alleged electioneering, and then she asked the town council on Monday to intervene.
Unit 5 needs to be held accountable for these illegal actions. So I'm asking each of you, what are you going to do about this issue? What is the Normal Police Department going to do about this issue?
Unit 5 Music Parents President Josh Jensen wasn't around by the time police came to take a report at the concert, but he says he couldn't believe police were even there at all. The group that was tabling was outside of the event, and the group is made up of parent advocates for music programming. Jensen says they've tabled and advocated for years, but this is the first time police have been involved.
It's very much seems to be the tenor of this election.
By definition, the Music Parents Group is an advocacy group, and because music programs have been threatened by a lack of funding if the referendum does not pass, Jensen says they decided to table at music events this semester.
the biggest way we think we can support music right now is voting yes. And so we've been working with Yes for Unit 5 to be able to get that information and be able to utilize that as we can at the events that we go to.
A police report from the March 16th event obtained by WGLT showed the officer who responded recommended the case be, quote, administratively closed due to a lack of evidence of any electioneering laws being broken. A spokesperson from the State Board of Elections says a better way to raise concerns about electioneering is to document what you see and let the McLean County State's Attorney's Office know. Having said that, Normal Police Chief Petrelli says the department has been trying to address the complaints raised with them fairly and appropriately.
We're just doing what I think the people's expectation is of the police department, that we take an unbiased, very objective approach to these things and do our jobs and not be influenced by political agendas.
Still, Petrelli says this election cycle has been an interesting one.
And like you said, it's unique. I don't remember the last time that it's been such a politically charged issue like it is right now. But you know what? That's how it goes, Things ebb and flow like that.
Music Parents President Josh Jensen says he wonders if in all the talk of who may be breaking what rule and when, the real issue at hand is getting lost. He says the referendum and the consequences of it all will affect kids the most.
I think everybody's being blinded by money right now, with the way the economy is and other things. But at the end of the day, it is about the kids. And that's what we've been trying to do, is refocusing on that.
Jensen says he's also been contacted by people who were interested in knowing if people who were against the referendum could table at events. He says that's not the mission of the Music Parents Group, but other people and other perspectives are welcome to set up.
And we've actually been asked this question. If there's a group that wants to come and post a no table, they're more than welcome to. Nobody's stopping. But we haven't seen one yet.
Unit 5 says nothing parents or staff have done thus far has violated any district policies. The State Board of Elections and Board of Education say as long as state statutes are not being violated, the deference is to individual school district policy. With reporting from Charlie Schlenker, I'm Lindsay Jones.
Early voting has started at the McLean County Government Center in downtown Bloomington. Municipal elections are April 4th. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm John Norton. Coming up tomorrow, some Unit 5 parents want to vote on the tax referendum, but they can't. We'll tell you why tomorrow. When students returned to school last year, it was clear the pandemic took a toll on learning. The state of Illinois invested in a number of strategies to help children recover. A major one was high-dosage tutoring. It's become something of a buzzword, but research shows it can be highly effective. Illinois State University is working on a program that the state plans to extend into the next year. Susie Ahn from Chicago Public Radio reports.
Class just let out at Mohawk School in South Suburban Park Forest, and Principal Lori Colbert walks the halls. The kids are all smiles, but Colbert remembers when students first came back to the building after remote learning. She noticed both academic and social-emotional losses.
We knew that we had a lot of work cut out for us as far as closing those gaps, those academic gaps, and meeting the students where they were.
Before the pandemic, about 28% of the students in the school district were meeting standards in English. After the pandemic, that number was cut by more than half. Math performance suffered even more. This was common across the state. The Park Forest School District, which Mohawk Elementary is a part of, is one of 46 districts in the state that are participating in the Illinois Tutoring Initiative run by Illinois State University. The money comes from the Illinois State Board of Education, which has spent nearly $300 million of its federal COVID relief dollars so far on helping schools recover. Christy Borders runs the program. She says time is limited during the day to work with students who are behind. With high-impact tutoring, kids in a small group have the time to master a skill. After a year of tutoring, she's seeing signs of improvements, but it's hard to say how soon a program like this can fully catch kids up.
The hope is when you build those foundational skills, then they can start moving a little quicker. And frankly, some of our students are years behind when it comes to grade level.
Governor State University, along with a few other Illinois colleges, are training and supplying the tutors for the Illinois Tutoring Initiative. Jessica Macias is a psychology grad student who tutors at Mohawk. She collects a few third graders from the cafeteria after dismissal.
No,
They walk to an empty classroom, pull out worksheets and math toys, but they also take a few minutes to talk about pajama day before they dive into fractions.
So you made it for PJ day. I wish I would have known I would have worn my PJs.
And then my class, I felt like sleeping.
Oh, because you were in your PJs?
Many districts have prioritized tutoring in their recovery efforts, even if they're not part of the state's program. Research shows all tutoring can be beneficial, but high-impact tutoring is especially effective because of its frequency and the attention given to students in small groups. Macias tutors in math for an hour three times a week.
It is not homework help. It's more what the children are learning in the curriculum at the school.
The tutoring program focuses on districts where COVID had a disproportionate impact. 83% of the students in the Park Forest School District are considered low income. The state got nearly $8 billion in COVID relief funds for schools, and each district got a cut of that. By districts participating in the state's program, it allows them to preserve their own COVID relief dollars for other necessities. The tutoring initiative won't have full data until the summer, but Director Christy Borders says some of the early stats show a noticeable difference between the kids who are receiving tutoring and the kids who opted out of the voluntary program.
I always say, yes, we want the test scores to move, but more than that, we want kids to believe that they can learn and that they can be confident in the classroom, because that's when real learning can occur.
The state is extending high-impact tutoring into next school year with its remaining federal COVID relief money. Border says the learning disruption during the pandemic was like water freezing in cracked pavement, deepening the divide. For more students to succeed, she thinks tutoring like this will be necessary even after COVID dollars dry up.
I'm Susie Ahn.
Pandemic-related academic and mental health challenges are a top concern for Illinois' new state superintendent. Tony Sanders previously ran U46 in Elgin, the state's second-largest school district. We'll bring back Susie Ahn from Chicago Public Radio, who sat down with Sanders, and she started by asking him how the state can help students recover academically and emotionally from the pandemic.
The state board, before I got here, was actually moving in the right direction. They created these regional hubs for social-emotional learning to try to empower school districts to really grow the teacher knowledge around social-emotional supports for students. And then recently, the governor announced this behavioral health transformation initiative, where we're all coming together to try to figure out ways to better serve the needs of students across the state. There will be a generational impact from COVID on student learning, and we have a lot of work to do at the state and at local levels to try to make up for that loss. The tutoring that the State Board of Education has offered across the state has been instrumental. I know it's something I used as a local superintendent, and it's something I think we need to continue to advance as a state. We have to come back to this, the need of having a quality teacher in every classroom. If we have students in classrooms with long-term subs or teachers that are just filling short-term needs of school districts, that's not in the best interest of students. So until we address the pipeline issue, I think we're going to continue to struggle with meeting the needs of kids.
And you were previously superintendent of U46 in the Elgin area. What do you think were your greatest accomplishments there?
Two things right out of the gate as superintendent. I announced first and foremost that we would not expel students any longer from the school district. We always found alternative placements for students in lieu of expulsions. And that happened within my first 2 weeks in the job. And we also announced that we would shift to full day kindergarten within that first year as well. We continue to expand the dual language program in U46 so that it's now kindergarten through 12th grade. So 12,000 of the 37,000 students are in a dual language program in that district. That's something I leave being very proud of.
I want to turn to something that we've seen over the past few years, you know, public education just kind of becoming more political. And we're seeing that play out, especially in local school board meetings. What do you think it will take to de-escalate the situation and unify school communities?
I wish I had a solution for it. I really do. I just don't know that there is a short-term solution for the politicalization. I know as you look across the research from Pew Research Center, you'll see this ever-widening gap between the left and the right in all areas of politics. And I think public education is squarely in the middle of that fight. We shouldn't be having the conflation of critical race theory and culturally responsive teachers, which is the two different CRTs that people confuse a lot. But we should all be caring about what's in the best interest of all kids every single day.
Finally, let's say we're 4 years from now. What do you hope will be different about education in Illinois?
One is at the state agency level, trying to come up with a new system of support for school districts. You know, within our accountability system, we label schools as either commendable, exemplary, targeted, or comprehensive. And I don't care what a school's title is. At the end of the day, every school needs to have some sort of an improvement plan. No matter how good they are, there's always room for every school to improve. And so I think coming up with a new state system of support for school district would be one of the top priorities. The other ones we've already touched on, meeting the social emotional needs of kids will have to be a top priority for these next 4 years. And then finally, the teacher pipeline work has to be a priority as well.
That was State Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders speaking with Chicago Public Radio's Susie Ong. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. March is Colorectal Awareness Month, and doctors are keenly aware of its risks this year. The American Cancer Society reports adults are being diagnosed with colon and rectal cancers at younger ages. Those in their early 50s and younger make up 1 in 5 colorectal cancer cases. That's twice as high as the rate a generation ago. Doctors now recommend getting screened for colorectal cancer at an earlier age. In this edition of WGLT Sound Health, medical oncologist Banu Vankalanka with the Carl Cancer Institute in Normal tells WGLT's Eric Stock why younger adults are more at risk.
I think over the last few years, there had been some significant changes in people's lifestyles, which I believe is a major contributing factor for the increased incidence of colorectal cancer. This could include possible inactivity, and the recent coronavirus epidemic doesn't seem to have helped the problem, but I don't think that's necessarily an increased risk factor for the incidence of colorectal cancer. But people's lifestyles have changed, the dietary indiscretion that seems to have crept into people's lives, along with the change in the microbiology of the intestinal tract, could all be contributing to the increased incidence of colorectal cancers. There may also be certain genetic factors which have not yet been identified, which probably are at play. And hopefully in the next few years, we would probably have a better idea about what exactly is happening.
Since you mentioned dietary factors as just one, what dietary considerations are leading to higher incidence?
So increased consumption of red meat and a non-plant-based diet seem to have a role in the development of cancers. And people probably would have to lean more towards plant-based diets in order to reduce the risk of developing colorectal cancers in the years to come.
Have you seen this in your practice, higher incidence of colon cancer among younger adults?
Absolutely. That's very true. And, you know, although this had initially been an incidental finding, there had been enough studies suggesting that this is actually proving to be a statistically significant event in the younger patients.
So when should someone get screened? When is the earliest age when they should start thinking about that?
Traditionally, the age of screening for colorectal cancer was thought to be age 50. But in the last year or two, there had been recommendations from the United States Preventive Task Force suggesting that the screening needs to be started at the age of 45.
Now, should that be a colonoscopy? Should that be a home test? Going in for an exam? What types of examinations are you looking at for screenings?
The gold standard for colorectal cancer screening had always been a colonoscopy because it gives you a direct visualization of what's happening inside the colon, but also gives the opportunity of taking a biopsy from that area. But there may be some patients who might not be very keen about undergoing colonoscopies, or maybe there are some patients who are too sick in order to undergo the investigation. In those patients, there is a test called Cologuard, which is based on testing for tumor DNA in the stool, and that might be an initial good starting investigation for these patients.
Do you generally recommend Cologuard? Are those as accurate?
So probably not as accurate as a colonoscopy. So most of my recommendations would start off with a colonoscopy unless the patients have certain objections to undergoing the investigation.
Are you concerned that having more screenings at a younger age, when they may be less likely to have cancer as opposed to someone older, will lead to more false positives?
It is possible, but I think considering the possibility that we are going to save some young lives, the increased incidence of the false positives can certainly be something that we can potentially trade-off against the benefits of doing it at an early age.
So age 45 is sort of best case scenario. What factors would cause someone to seek out an exam at an earlier age?
The other things that probably come into play under those circumstances is a strong family history of malignancy. If somebody has a relative who has colorectal cancer at a young age, I think starting the colonoscopy or maybe even the Cologuard testing at an earlier age than the index case, which is the first member of the family diagnosed with that cancer, would be a good idea.
What are the warning signs that someone may have colon cancer? They should be tested for it.
Usually the symptoms at presentation could include a change in their bowel habits, alternatively weight loss, abdominal symptoms, or noticing blood in their stools would all be early signs of something happening. And those symptoms need to be brought up to their primary care provider, who will probably be referring them over for further investigations to be done.
The American Cancer Society's latest report says there are more left-sided tumors that are being diagnosed, meaning that an increasing percentage of tumors are happening closer to the rectum. Is that something that you are seeing as well? And could there be a reason for this?
So I don't think that there are reasons that have been fully elucidated at this point of time, but certainly there are reports suggesting that there is an increased incidence. This is probably just statistical at this point, but I have not seen any firm data as to why it is happening more on the left side compared to the right side.
To what extent has the rate changed among older adults as they're going up proportionally among younger adults?
So there certainly had been a decline in the incidence of colorectal cancer in the older patients, largely because of the awareness of colorectal cancer and also the regular screening. In the younger population, it looks like the incidence is going up approximately 2% every year. And at this point of time, the number of patients with cancers in the age group of less than 50 is quite small, less than 10%. But in the next 10 to 15 years, we are expecting it to significantly go up.
That was Dr. Banu Vakalanka with the Carl Cancer Institute in Normal with WGLT's Eric Stock. Vakalanka says the best way to reduce your risk of colorectal cancer is to cut red meat production in half. Vakalanka says red meat takes longer to digest, and the longer it stagnates in your bowels, the more likely carcinogens can develop.
Support for WGLT health coverage comes from Carle Health. You can count on Carle as your partner in healthcare. Information at carle.org.
And we'll hope you join us tomorrow on WGLT Sound Ideas as an end of the era is happening. Our very own Lauren Warnicke will take one last roll around the rink at Skate and Place in Bloomington. And that today is WGLT Sound Ideas, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton. Story help today came from WGLT's Lindsay Jones and Lauren Warnicke. Story help also came from Chicago Public Radio's Susie Ahn. And once again, Samantha Hill produced Sound Ideas today. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media, part of the NPR network.